Right, we're getting to the pointy end of the day now. Our next writer who's going to read for us today is John Bartlett. Now, John Bartlett, I think, is quite well known to many of you, particularly in this region as a writer. John and I have followed each other around a bit, taking writing courses at various community centres and neighbourhood houses in fairly recent years. So I'll be really interested to hear you read today, John. His most recent novel, Estuary, was released in 2014, and I think John's going to read an excerpt today from that book. Is that right, John?
I think so.
You think so? You've got about 10 seconds to make up your
mind. Well, I was a bit, thanks, Jan, I was a bit confused today about whether to read something more serious from my novel or to have a bit of a go at humour, which I know is always a bit of a risk. And I did bring a piece that I thought was funny. So perhaps I'll read a little bit of my novel, if that's all right, and then I'll have a go at the humorous bit, what I think is humorous anyway. It's a bit rude too, so... You know,
that's all right, because Collins is going to be very rude.
Oh, good.
All right. Oh, is it?
Okay, mine's just a bit rude.
Thank you.
So look, perhaps just I'll start with a little bit of my perhaps more serious work, my last novel, Estuary, and just read a little bit of that, perhaps to show that I can be a serious writer too. This is taken from a point of the novel where the main character, Leela, or Lily, has basically just been, has just gone into a psychiatric hospital. There's something wrong in the world and I must set it right. You wouldn't understand it any more than my relatives would. Lily sits on one side of a desk facing the doctor. The wide space between them feels like some uncrossable desert, but she tries to answer the doctor's questions as best she can. If she narrows her eyes, she can keep in her vision this man in the white jacket writing in a book. His eyes are steel grey and his wiry moustache looks to her like a small toothbrush, bobbing above his pink fleshy lips as he asks her questions. I shouldn't really be here. It's only because my relatives are so cruel and don't care for me. But God has told me that I am a flower of the Lady Fatima and that he will send someone to help me tonight. I know that you doctors have been sent by God to assist me. Most of the time, Lily wanders aimlessly along the corridors all day long. But sometimes, staff remember to let patients out into the airing yard, and she always runs to the fence. She thinks she could keep running forever, but when she gets to the fence, there's always a big ditch that she can't cross over. Lily discovers that it's called a ha-ha, but she realises later that the joke's on her. So she just runs to the other fence and looks out into the paddocks filled with grasses and olive trees, their leaves turning from green to grey in the chilly wind. Lily, come back, come back, the orderlies call out to her. But she's already gone, running down the sandy track along the river with the willows caressing her face, and then over the high dunes, feet sinking into the deep sand. Lily, come back, come back. Sometimes, especially on hot days, she runs through dark green valleys with carpets of sweet-smelling mosses and white violets that she wants to stuff into her mouth and devour. Lily, come back. This piece was my attempt at humour that I wrote a few years ago and has been published, I entitled Magnum Opus, which has nothing to do with Magna Carta, which I think is 800 years anniversary this year. They're very different. It was a Wednesday morning at 9:37 when Herm Hoyt of Upper Blitz Creek finally decided it was time to stop dribbling into his rice pops and chocolate whiz cereal and start writing the profound and moving book he had always planned. One that would make the world stand up and take notice. A deceptively simple story, yet one crafted from words artfully polished and dripping with just a glint of spiritual nuance. A winning combination, surely, in contemporary publishing. But all this decision-making had exhausted Herm Hoyt, so he decided to put the idea of his brilliant magnum opus on hold while he made a cup of coffee. As the coffee was brewing, he noticed the milk was getting a bit low, and so started to make a list of things he needed at the supermarket. Margaret. Soy, low fat, or full cream. Why did the 21st century have to offer so many options? He did have a theory, but he kept it to himself. Surely it was part of a capitalist plan to render otherwise creative minds helpless by presenting such an array of choices that hapless consumers opted to lie on the couch and watch MasterChef rather than make bold decisions. Still, there was another potential chapter title lurking here, something like The Plethora of Consumerist Options and Their Contribution to National Malaise. Not bad. Now he was really cooking. Hermhoy looked out the window, out the kitchen window. On the inside of the pane of glass was his baby on board sticker, which always made him feel like he was part of a bigger family. A magpie was sitting on the clothesline, and as Hermhoy watched, it appeared to look him in the eye quite carefully and deliberately before crapping all over his black pair of Calvin Klein underpants. These were the very Calvin Kleins that his cousin Nord from Holland had left behind last Christmas when he and his wife had stayed for 3 weeks. Hermhoy had found them under the bed after the Relis had gone on to Sydney, and they supported perfectly his recently beginning to sag gluteus maximus and looked much more stylish than his own collection of Tajay underpants. His cousin wouldn't miss them, and anyway, Nord worked for Nokia and was making enough money to buy several pair of Calvin Kleins each week if he wanted to. As Hermhoy rescued the underpants from the clothesline and was putting them in a bucket of water to soak, he suddenly realised that, quote, writing this book could be the first step in his long plan to, quote, take over the world. Not in any coup d'etat sort of way, but a more subtle, taking the academic world by storm by magnum opus style. Didn't Hermhoy already have contacts in at least 4 different countries, apart from his auntie Salome, who was in Brazil with Interior Designers Without Borders, so he supposed that she didn't really count. Having these sorts of friends wasn't a bad place to start his world domination of minds, though, and to be able to give up his day job with Juice magazine. 4 overseas contacts was more than Hitler had in the beginning, when he was a poor juvenile taking art classes in Vienna, and long before the days of vocational guidance counsellors, and young Adolf had obviously needed one of those. Bad career choice there. Using a technique called intermobility of seemingly unassociated images, or IOSUI, Hermhoy allowed himself the luxury of a smile at the image of Hitler riding in triumph into Paris with a pair of Calvin Klein underpants on his head. Now the idea was going somewhere. The concept of underpants on head would make an interesting focus for the first chapter, make readers smile, not too broadly, and be an opportunity for Hermhoy to say something profound about the triumph of capitalism over fascism in the end. Could a doctorate be far away? There was current thinking in the EU for a case of changing the Arc de Triomphe to the Arc de Cline anyway. As if on cue, a voice from the lounge shouted, "And the government predicts lower than expected current account deficits." "No need to shout," called Hermhoy. "I heard you the first time." Hermhoy kept a number of radios in different parts of the house, turned on during the day, apart from the TV in the lounge. It meant that interesting people, experts in their field, shouted out profound things to him when he was least expecting it. Hermhoy thought this would help stimulate his creative juices, and besides, it made him feel like he had all these fascinating and intellectual people actually living in his house. He did wonder if he could convince them to contribute to paying the rent as well. But what about chapter 2? This was always the problem with his writing, as with his life. A sudden preliminary creative surge, followed by a bewildering silence, another premature literary ejaculation. Hermhoy would need a snappy title for his timely tone. Getting the title right was paramount. He had learnt this during his Write Snappy Titles That Will Get You Published, a writing course by correspondence. He had never quite finished because he could never quite manage the idea of snappy when it came to getting all the necessary information into a single short line. One that the sub-editors didn't eventually cut during their long, boring nights in front of PC monitors speckled with flecks of Chinese takeaway. How about retroactive fascism and the cult of 21st century exhibitionism? Not quite as catchy as he'd hoped, but something to start with. At least it captured the idea, the novel concept of underpants on head. And hey, hadn't Madonna got famous by wearing her bra on the outside? The question was whether exhibitionism was still a valid art form in the 21st century. A quick search of Google would give him the answer he needed. He needed capitals. Something with capitals always gave writing a certain magisterial importance. But then, bodily emissions of one sort or another were his bread and butter, so to speak, at Juice magazine, which reminded him of his deadline. He was still working on that erotic fantasy involving 2 gallons of cream, low fat of course, a private school headmistress, a high court judge, the winning AFL Grand Final football team, and 25 pairs of lacy black crotchless panties. He might have to put his magnum opus thing on hold for a while. He was already expecting an irate phone call any minute from Juice editor Sang Hua, demanding his overdue story. With expected showers in the afternoon, said a woman from the lounge. Well, now you tell me, Herm Hoyt shouted back at the weather girl with purple lipstick and hair as pointy as a toilet brush. You could have told me yesterday. Isn't that what forecasting is meant to be? Perhaps these interruptions weren't such a good idea for the creative process. Back to the Juice story. Maybe here there was another idea for his magnum opus. Was the prevalence of porn, especially as an internet phenomenon, making Western literature redundant? Weren't students doing PhDs on Debbie Does Dallas rather than Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man? Herm Hoyt's thought process was interrupted by his mobile phone announcing that he had an SMS message. His text messages were always announced by the 1812 overture so as to distinguish them from his phone messages, to which he was alerted by the Rolling Stones in definitely the last world tour of 2005 version of Stairway to Heaven. This was a text message from Video Very Easy telling him that he now owed $1,219.20 on his overdue videos. But that his birthday was coming up, he could borrow 2 first release videos for the price of one on Tuesday afternoons between 2 and 4 p.m. God, wasn't life getting complicated. Herm Hoyt had gone off Video Very Easy anyway since he had started making his own videos from cams he kept in strategic parts of his house. His first release, a 2-hour video, Herm Hoyt's Long Sleep, was set up in his bedroom and was already released through an internet marketing company called Turn Your Life Into Cash. Herm Hoyt's video had been such a success that the company was now demanding a second release, and Herm Hoyt wondered what he could do for an encore. Perhaps a cam set up in the bathroom. He could probably make more out of his videos than writing for the magazine market, and wasn't the book magazine industry about to die anyway? Believe it or not.
John, I would have loved to have heard more, but time begins to set the moment, and that's good fun. I can't get over just how many contemporary cultural references you've got into that first 5 minutes of that second read. Good on you. Now, and the classic thought all writers have, but what about chapter 2? Where to from here?